This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Matters. Joining me now to comment on this breaking news, Congressman Darrell Issa, a member of both the House Judiciary and Foreign Affairs Committee. What's your take on his firing? This is pretty big news.
It is, and hooray for an agency that finally did something right, which is recognize there's no place in the FBI for somebody whose bias, whose conduct, whose statements show that they were not willing to be fair, and that, in fact, they compromise the very integrity or bring into question the integrity of the FBI. So hooray that they didn't wait any longer. They waited a long time.
Yeah, this is a 22-year veteran who displayed clear bias against Trump in those text messages. What took so long?
Well, the process of getting rid of anyone in federal government other than political appointees is long and laborious. They're usually covered by one or even two different protections, the Civil Service Act and unions. And the process goes on forever. You might have noticed that at the IRS, people fired in the sort of Lois Lerner era were typically rehired, over 200 of them. So the process of firing them is long. The bars from rehiring generally aren't affirmative. And this is one of the problems in government. You know, the Congress acted specifically for the Veterans Administration to make it easier to fire people because our veterans were dying for lack of quality care. So it is a problem. It continues to be. But this is one of those cases in which the goods were on this individual in no uncertain way. And he had really brought shame on the FBI, an agency in which most agents keep their politics to themselves and keep their biases literally out of their conduct.
Well, with the exception of James Comey, of course.
I said most.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew exactly what you meant. He was integral to the Bureau for several reasons, but two major investigations. Obviously, the Russia investigation, which, again, there was bias there. And then also the Hillary Clinton email investigation. You know, Lindsey Graham has obviously come out, and he says that there should be a second special counsel to oversee this because of the concern of the few bad eggs that you refer to in the FBI that they feel maybe there is a bias here. By firing Strzok, does that perhaps qualm the concerns of the Mueller investigation being partisan?
No, you really can't do it that way. Michael Horowitz, the inspector general, did what he could do under the IG Act. But you do need somebody with subpoena authority, somebody that demands documents, many of them outside the Department of Justice and from former employees, to get to the bottom of it. You can't have an agency investigate itself effectively, but particularly when it's the agency that has all the power. You might remember that one of the things that Strzok did was he held on to his ability to personally declassify information, which meant he could leak information by declassifying it, making it public. He held on to a lot of those capabilities that helped him essentially create a legal way to spy on a candidacy of President Trump.
Does this further boost then Lindsey Graham's claim that he believes that a special counsel, a second special counsel, should be appointed? Because let's remember, you need to have prosecutorial power in order to continue to, you know, hold these people accountable, and there needs to be accountability here, and sadly within the FBI itself.
Well, the Attorney General oversees all of these, and he has not recused himself from corruption and misconduct within his agency, Department of Justice. So it is completely within the ability of the Attorney General to name an individual, perhaps a U.S. attorney or some, or even a retired U.S. attorney, to investigate this agency, to have full access, to have subpoena authority, and to get to the bottom and the top of all of this past misconduct. Without it, we, the American people, are, and even the president, can't have confidence in the Department of Justice, and we need that.
Representative Daryl Issa, a Republican member of the House Judiciary Committee, commenting on the Stroke firing yesterday. You know, just thinking that here it is, Daryl Issa, a former businessman, looking the way the government operates. It's got to be brain damaging for him.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. It's always great to have you along with us. I'm glad you could stop by and share a part of your day with us as we continue to pursue the truth no matter where it leads. Peter Greer is going to join us now. We're going to talk about his brand new book, Rooting for Rivals, which is an invitation to leaders to reject pride of ownership in pursuit of a higher, more compelling mission. Now, to fundamentally alter the posture and approach with which to love and serve based on our shared core commitments as followers of Christ. Now, to realize that we are not satellites operating independent of one another, but instead a constellation, so to speak, that is more beautiful when seen together. Now, to view organizations not as grand murals, but as pieces of a mosaic created by our master artist, beautifully written here, and I'm just reading it. Now, to release trade secrets and mine, he says, not yours, mentality, which undermine our ultimate united mission as followers of Jesus. And I guess we've got a disconnect with Peter, but he'll be back here with us in just a moment. He was formerly employed by World Relief, serving as a microfinance advisor in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, later managed Urwego, which was recognized as the best microfinance institution in Rwanda by the United Nations. Peter also worked with CARE Zimbabwe and implemented fraud protection measures in cooperation with Harvard University's CAR Center of Human Rights. Peter, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, great to have you here to talk about your book, Rooting for Rivals. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I was talking with a foundation executive, and he talked about how there was three different organizations that came to him within a relatively short period of time. They were asking for funding for the same project, for the same part of the world. And he wondered, why is there so much redundancy, and is this really the best that we could do? And so we started a conversation and invited some of us in to figure out what can we do to stop this unnecessary replication, and how can we imagine a bigger impact if we put down our logos and our egos and imagined how nonprofits, churches, charities, all kinds of different organizations would come together to dream about bigger dreams that would be impossible to accomplish on our own. So what hinders that? So spent 2 years researching the great examples of where we've seen collaboration, open-handedness, and generosity, and tried to figure out how can we accelerate the pace of progress, accelerate the pace of impact, and do so with a collaborative approach so we can accomplish more together than we ever could on our own.
Yeah. On theory, and the way it starts out, sounds great. So how did it work out?
Well, you know, it's one of these things that Oftentimes when you get into it, you realize that collaboration is difficult and there are a lot of obstacles. And so a lot of the things that we do were to try and name what are those obstacles that inhibit collaboration and what can we do to really unlock the power and potential of collaboration. And so a lot of them actually focus at the individual level. So looking at why is it that we feel envious when other organizations are successful instead of being the first ones to stand and cheer on their success? So I think even about my early time at Hope International, how I would have these growth charts on my wall that would track our organizational growth compared to other organizations. Mm. And that might be common within the business world, but what that did is it turned my viewpoint. Instead of celebrating the success of other organizations, it caused me to almost feel jealous of the ones that were growing faster. And amazing how we oftentimes compare up instead of down.
Yeah, exactly.
Oftentimes, yeah. So a lot of the issues, a lot of what inhibits collaboration are really issues that we need to first address at a very personal level.
Yeah, it really is part of that human part that needs to go through the refiner's fire, is it not?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And yet one of the things that was so encouraging is that we did find incredible examples of individuals coming together and, you know, individuals that would have their big fundraising banquet and would intentionally choose to focus on another organization in their community that was doing great work and to celebrate that and just uncommon generosity. So there are thankfully a lot of great examples, where we are seeing, collective impact and organizations overcoming some of these obstacles to do more together.
Yeah, we need more highlighting of those instances. And if we're outward focused as opposed to inward focused, because our instinct is, as you say, it's easy to get caught up in the comparative business world, business as usual, so to speak. But God's kingdom is unique. And, you know, to be followers of Christ, there is a higher calling there. And that's the challenge, is how do we get there? And some of it, as I can imagine for you, Peter, you know, God has shown you the mountain at the mountaintop. You've seen it. And but it's just getting there and realizing, and maybe you realize it, you know, part and parcel, little glimpses of it. And you say, yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. It's kind of like I remember when Keith Green was on a mission to ignite a revival. Every night he would go out and you know, and praising God, and he would ask, you know, his inner circle. He says, did we get there? Were we really bringing in the Holy Spirit in such a way we were igniting a revival? He said, not close. It just was, you know, it was kind of a, you know, you did a great job, but no, we didn't really feel it. And then there'd be some nights where he'd say, oh, we had to do it. You know, I just feel the Holy Spirit. I feel like we're there. And then they would come back and say, no. And then some nights when he didn't and he felt that he was so disconnected, they'd say, gosh, you were so close. And we could just feel. And so, you know, I guess that whole process just keeps you humble, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the fun parts of again thinking through this was really not just finding those examples, but also realizing how much when we open up Scripture, how much is really inviting us into this bigger vision mm-hmm. beyond ourselves. And even in the prayer that Jesus prays the night before he went to the cross, his prayer in John chapter 17 is about unity, not just of his disciples, not just of his followers, but for all of us as well. Mm-hmm. And imagine that, the night before, all that was to happen, what was on Jesus's mind was our unity. And we need those prayers. Today mm-hmm. we live in a divided world. Right. And I believe that the rest of society, they look at the church and they say, is there any difference? Really, is there any difference in how they treat each other? Is there any difference? And so I think in a divided world, we have an incredible opportunity to show that there is a difference. Mm-hmm. That even among some real differences, we are on the same team and we can focus on some of the same goals and can have an uncommon way of treating each other, which is very different from the cutthroat competitive world that so many of us live in the rest of our time.
Could you imagine the revival that would be ignited if we were, you know, And I know that this is the case in some ministries where they're outward focused and they're accomplishing this. But if you think we could do it on a grander scale where we're celebrating God's grace and the movement of His hand and His intention upon humanity, if that could be our focus, what could happen, you know, to our families and our cities and our country and the world? It could be explosive, really. I mean, and this is amazing, and I appreciate your perspective on this, Breeder. We're going to pick it up on the other side of this break. We're talking about rooting for rivals right here on Bill Martinez Live, 15 minutes after the top of the hour right now.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Have you experienced the miracle of CBDs? They can help you reduce suffering, reduce stress, help you sleep better, modulate inflammation in the body, and is absolutely safe. MetaHemp Solutions offers a radically innovative approach to CBDs for exceptional results. Stop suffering and reduce your stress now. Isn't it time for a good night's sleep? Stop worrying about tomorrow today. Lab tested for potency, purity, and is non-psychoactive. Free shipping to all 50 states. Try our product risk-free. Money-back guarantee. Use code GCN15 to get 15% off. That's code GCN15 to get 15% off. Offer ends soon, so visit MetaHemp Solutions today at MetaHempSolutions.com or call 833-858-7500. Suffer no more. Get rid of the stress and sleep better. Get our product now at MetaHempSolutions.com. That's MetaHempSolutions.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original, most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
This is Jessica Armand, founder of My Magic Mud. Our team helped organize a successful effort to remove fluoride from our city's water supply. This is our passion. My Magic Mud Oral Care purifies and brightens your smile naturally. GCN listeners, please support my family business by purchasing our product from your local health food store. We're also available at CVS Pharmacy. Or visit us at MyMagicMud.com and take 10% off now with coupon code GCN10.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com.
Right here, right now, Bill Martinez live.
There is power in the name of Jesus. There is power in the name.
Breaking chains here on Bill Martinez Live. Welcome back, 19 minutes after the top of the hour. If you're among millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care, we've got good news for you. This portion being brought to you by my friends at Liberty HealthShare. It's a Christian community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and your hospital. Isn't that awesome? Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. And that includes mom, dad, and all the kids. For more information, give them a call, 855-585-4237, or visit libertyhealthshare.org. They got all the details. Our conversation with Peter Greer continues. We're talking about his brand new book, Rooting for Rivals, that invites leaders to reject pride of ownership in pursuit of a higher, more compelling mission. Peter, why is this book different? I mean, we've heard so much in the past about, you know, servant leadership and that sort of thing, but there's something special about your book. Explain to our audience.
You know, whenever we personally have a interest in the topic, you start out by saying, well, who else has written about this? What else is out there? And there are some great books. I really appreciate The Power of One, just one example by Greg Holder. But, you know, we really tried in this to do something a little bit different, which is to follow the methodology that Jim Collins outlines in his book, Good to Great, and basically follow a methodology where we asked a group of industry experts to say, who are the most generous, open-handed, collaborative leaders that you know? And so we identified this list, and there were some names that kept rising to the top. And then we spent hours and hours interviewing them and trying to understand not just what they do, that certainly is interesting, but also what they believe. And so what they believe, what came through as we interviewed these leaders, was they think about two key questions differently. And the first question is, do we live in a world of abundance or scarcity? Leaders that believe that we live in a world of scarcity are always fighting for a little bigger slice of a very small pie. Mm-hmm. But we found that the collaborative, generous leaders, they believe in a world of abundance. And so they say, let's expand the pie. Let's have more. They were people that believe that even today, five loaves and two fish, that mm-hmm. can be enough.
Right.
It's possible for exponential growth. It's possible to have a bigger pie. And the other thing that they thought differently about was their calling. The leaders that were not open-handed and generous, they thought no bigger than the bounds of their organization. But the other leaders that we found, they were ones that were captured not just by how their organization can grow, but they had a bigger and more compelling calling, which was about expanding the kingdom of God. So they thought differently about abundance and scarcity, and they thought different about their calling, whether it extended to their little club, their organization, or if it was a bigger and broader call to expand the kingdom of God. And so that was really the framework that we used to identify and celebrate these examples of how we can have more collaboration and organizational partnerships.
Peter, what golden nuggets. I mean, after coming up with those two, I mean, you just got to high five and be excited. I mean, this is really brilliant stuff. I mean, you make it very plain and simple just by observing, people have been successful with this. And we've often said that if you want to be successful, just follow the leaders, follow the people who have been successful. And, you know, that's wisdom to be able to, you know, have this kind of counsel from these people because and these are heart issues, right? I mean, this isn't just head stuff. This is ingrained in the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the pieces that we heard as we started to do this, started to talk about this, started to learn and then how to implement this is almost everyone that we talked to said, yes, that makes sense. Almost everyone says, yes, of course we should have a mission that goes beyond just our organization. Of course we shouldn't have unnecessary replication. That's bad use of resources. Mm-hmm. But then they also would say, but why isn't there more of it? If it makes sense, if it's so intuitive, then why aren't there more examples? And why does competition seem to be a better descriptor of how churches treat each other than mm-hmm. truly linking arms and doing something together? And so that's where we, again, just found there's a separate genre, and we want more people to be in the genre of leaders that mm-hmm. think about the world through a lens of abundance and really have a calling that extends out beyond their organization.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about that which is being intuitive. Well, if you're of the world, then you're going to look at it more from a perspective of scarcity. And that might be a tough, a tough analysis and evaluation of where you sit. And just asking yourself these two questions. Do you live in abundance or scarcity? Are you open-handed? I mean, do you believe that God is really at the center of this mission? Or are you, are you trying to do it in and of your own power? That's some serious soul searching that has to be done by the leaders if you want to live more abundantly and more open-handed, do you not?
Yeah, no, well said, Bill, absolutely.
And I mean, that's going to be tough, Peter. I mean, to get to it, because when you're used to doing business, and what I want, you know, businessmen and women who are hearing here is that, look, this is going to be a process. And I mean, if you're convicted that maybe you have, gone the way of the traditions of business and business models, it's easy to get caught in this. I mean, take it from somebody who's been there, done it. Not only did I buy the T-shirt, I think I bought some and shared it with other people. We're guilty to varying degrees on this. But what you're sharing with us, Peter, is an opportunity for us to make some better choices. And if you decide to go down that road, you might say less traveled, good choice. But understand that it may not necessarily be an easy road. I think it'll get easier down the road. But you gotta let go of some old things to take on the new, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Ray Kroc, who launched and scaled McDonald's, the empire, he famously said that if any of his competitors were drowning, he would stick a hose in their mouth and turn on the water. And then he goes on to say, this is dog eat dog, rat eat rat. You're talking about the American way of survival of the fittest. Right. And unfortunately, I do think that cutthroat competition approach has fallen over into the churches and charities and nonprofits.
Because we're competitive people and we want the credit. We want to be able to say, look what I've done for this organization. Well, yeah, but what have you done for the kingdom?
Right, and that's the better way of looking. So if two churches are in an area, just as one small example, and if one church has 200 and the other church has 200, and then suddenly that other church grows to 500, the question is, do you, if you're still at the church of 200, do you say, we're now down 300, or you say the kingdom of God just grew by 300.
Exactly.
And so I think the way that we talk about each other, the reason why we chose is the title Rooting for Rivals, because we think this is a small way, a first step on a journey to say, let's be each other's biggest fans. Let's be each other's biggest advocates, because we live in a world of abundance, not scarcity. And if we're thinking just about our organization, we're thinking too small.
Yeah, exactly, Peter. You know, we just played the song about the breaking the chains, you know, the chain breaker. It's so easy for us to get enslaved with the things of this world without even really realizing it. But, you know, my thought is, hearing you speak, is just how liberating that will be for the churches that catch this.
Well, that is our hope. Yeah. There's going to be a new movement of partnership, collaboration, generosity, and that we would remember that we are on the same team.
Amen. Rooting for Rivals invites leaders to reject pride of ownership in pursuit of a higher, more compelling mission and one of freedom that is beyond your imagination and yet to experience. Peter Greer on Bill Martinez Live. Peter, thank you so much.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield, and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business
Census Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump tweets on the news of a man driving a car through security barriers at London's Parliament building this morning, injuring several people. The president writing, quote, another terrorist attack in London. These animals are crazy and must be dealt with through toughness and strength. British authorities say the man's in his late 20s. He's been arrested but is not cooperating.
At this early stage of the investigation, no other suspects at the scene have been identified or reported to police. There is no intelligence at this time of further danger to Londoners or the rest of the UK connected to this incident.
It's now unclear whether former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort's legal team will present its case today after all. Instead, there's a new defense motion requesting the court dismiss the case. This is USA Radio News.
You knew the risks when you decided to drive drunk. There could be a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But that didn't stop you, did it? You knew you could get arrested. You could incur huge legal expenses. And you could possibly even lose your job. You were well aware of the consequences of driving drunk. But one thing's for sure. You were wrong when you said it was no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. This message brought to you by NHTSA.
In need of comfort? Look to two American icons, the Company Store and the LaCrosse Comforter. Available in down and down-free options in four warmth levels and 14 colors. For over 100 years, no one gives you more choices and better quality than the Company Store. Go to thecompanystore.com and enter code RADIO15 to receive 15% off your entire order and free shipping. That's thecompanystore.com. The Company Store. Comfort that fits your style.
It's Bill Martinez live.
Fully known. Loved by you. You won't let go home. No matter what I do. And it's not one or the other. It's hard truth.
Bill Martinez live.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 20 minutes before the top of the hour. I am Bill Martinez. David Kirkpatrick joins us. We're going to be talking about his book, Into the Hands of Soldiers, Freedom and Chaos in Egypt and the Middle East. A little bit of background just for recall here. It was in 2011, as you may recall, Egyptians of all sex, ages, and social classes shook off millennia of autocracy, then elected a Muslim brother as president. The 2013 military coup replaced him with a new strongman, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who has cracked down on any dissent or opposition with a degree of ferocity Mubarak never dared. New York Times correspondent David Kirkpatrick arrived in Egypt with his family less than 6 months before the uprising first broke out in 2011, looking for a change from life in Washington, D.C. As revolution and violence engulfed the country, he received an unexpected and immersive education in the Arab world. Well, welcome to Egypt, huh, David?
Indeed, indeed.
Wow, what an experience for you. Here it is, 6 months before. Did you have any idea that this was what you were walking into, thinking, well, let's get out of the rat race of D.C., let's take the family and Egypt of all places?
No, I thought Egypt was going to be a kind of base to travel from. Nobody said anything was going to happen in Egypt. The expectation was just more of the same. Although, funnily enough, there was a kind of sense of anticipation. You know, when I got there, Mubarak, Hosni Mubarak, who ruled for 30 years, was in his 80s, or about 80, and there was a sense that something had to give. You know, the state was obviously not functioning. At the same time, he'd opened the door just a crack to free expression and political pluralism. So there was a sort of openness about the brutality of the police state, about the dysfunction of the economy, about the general sense of neglect. So in retrospect, I think a lot, you know, the signs were there that something had to give.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you say, the crack in the door was open, and this busted wide out for a people that heretofore had not been exposed to this kind of liberty, right?
Yeah, that's true. It was unprecedented, to say the least, and not just in Egypt. I mean, what happened in Egypt inspired uprisings around
Egypt,
as I'm sure many of you listeners recall. I mean, there was a time when it was just breathtaking. You'd look out every Friday, and every Arab capital was up in arms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Arab Spring ran massively, and so you had all this activity going on. And what was the West doing about this? You know, U.S. policy. We seem to, in retrospect, misunderstand what was happening there.
Well, you know, I wrote this book for two reasons. One is because I feel that what happened in Egypt during those years was really a collision of all the forces that are still animating the region today. And it really changed the way I look at the whole region. And I think that anybody who reads the book and follows me through it will come away with a new understanding of it, all the seeming chaos around us now. The other reason I wrote it, is, as you mentioned, is to try to look at what was really going on inside the White House. I often wondered at the time, what could they be thinking? Mm-hmm. And what I learned is they weren't thinking any one thing, that there were really always two contradictory impulses at war with each other inside the Obama administration, a desire to kind of stand with the forces of democratic change on the one hand, towards which President Obama himself often leaned, and at the same time, an impulse to stick with the authoritarian allies that we already knew, whether they were in the Egyptian military or in the Persian Gulf or even in Israel.
I think what happened during this period of time, and David, I don't know if you agree with this, but I mean, it was like you've got the devil you know versus the devil you don't. And, you know, here the people have been used to, as I mentioned in the introduction, they've been used to a certain paradigm and an operation of government. And now all of a sudden, you know, some possibilities occurred. And they just, it was like they just weren't aware. And even more so, people on the outside, and I would say the United States and others, just didn't know what to do with this energy.
You know, I think that's right to a certain extent. First of all, let me correct myself. I didn't mean to lump Israel in with the authoritarian governments of the region.
No, I didn't gather that. I didn't gather you were saying that. Okay, all right, no worries.
So one thing to keep in mind is when I was there in Egypt moving among the demonstrators, you know, I did not hear people say, gosh, we don't know what to do with our political liberty. They knew pretty intuitively that they wanted to have the peaceful rotation of power and a more accountable government and some freedom to criticize their government. And that was broadly shared among the people. Mm-hmm. Running against that, of course, was a fear. And the fear was that some other group was going to hog all the power. So and again, you would hear Islamists afraid of the army, that the army was going to take over, liberals afraid the Islamists were going to take over, Christians afraid of the Muslim majority around them, or the government afraid of the mob in the streets, that some new strongman might come to take all the proceeds of corruption the way the old regime had, you know, with their replacing the old clique with a new clique. Mm-hmm. And so I think what happened on the ground was less kind of confusion at the newfound freedom as a clash between hope and fear. And at the end of the day, the fears won out.
And because it got to the point where they're, you know, they're going, wait a minute, something's not, it's not gelling correctly. So then let's bring the military in. And now we have the rise of al-Sisi, right?
Well, did anybody really say, let's bring the military in? You know, there were demonstrations on June 30th, 2013, calling for the elected president to stand for early re-elections. I don't think anybody in that crowd was saying, what we really need is a new military dictatorship.
Right. No, I agree.
It's been in the U.S. But what happened there, the military invited itself back to power.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it, the reason I'm saying this, and of course, from a Western perspective, obviously, David, I mean, you know, here we've got, a couple hundred years of experience of freedom and democracy. We're still working through this experiment ourselves. We're certainly, you know, far from being perfect on it. So it is these eyes that see it to say, okay, were the people, were they coordinated enough to where they could really see it through? And there, you know, when I say bring in the military, it was like, okay, this is getting a bit chaotic. And I guess by virtue of the vacuum that was existing, somebody had to step in and lead the country, right?
Well, let's look at Tunisia. You know, it's a much smaller country because it doesn't have the same strategic importance. People kind of leave it alone. Mm-hmm. And Tunisia went through a kind of a similar crisis. There was a sort of paralysis in the political process. Nobody could trust each other. Things really ground to a halt, and there was a lot of polarization. And they got back to work, and they buckled. They rode through it. You know, they had one election that brought Islamists to power. They had another election that took the Islamists out of power. There was a peaceful rotation there. And in Tunisia today, you can still speak your mind freely. You know, the story's not over there, but we have to say that democracy in Tunisia so far is succeeding.
Right.
And the culture, the background is not so different. In fact, Tunisia had arguably less experience with political pluralism than Egypt did.
Interesting. And that's a good point that you bring up between the two. We got to go to break here, but let me ask this question because it's begging to be asked. Okay, so what was the main difference between Tunisia and Egypt?
Well, one difference is an apolitical military.
Tunisia's
military stayed out of it.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, we'll continue to unravel this. His book, Into the Hands of Soldiers, Freedom and Chaos in Egypt and the Middle East. We're visiting with David Kirkpatrick, international correspondent for the New York Times. Just about 18 minutes before the top of the hour. Stay with us. We got more from David after this.
Life insurance is one of those things that just about everybody needs, but few people actually have. Hey, if you die unexpectedly without life insurance, guess what? You'll leave your family with even a bigger mess. Life insurance will help replace your family's income. It'll help cover burial expenses. Life insurance can even help pay off debt like credit cards and medical bills. Life insurance can even pay for college. And if you own a business and you die, life insurance can help your business from collapsing. It can even help cover estate taxes. Life insurance has never been more affordable and needed. Plus, you can always shop around even if you have a plan and save some money. So call the Life Insurance Quote Line right now for free pricing information.
800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. That's 800-915-9164.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-359-3360.
There's a place for answers. A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-359-3360. That's 1-800-359-3360.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
If you're young and healthy, you don't need life insurance, right? Yeah, that's what I used to think, too, until my brother died at 38. Joe left his wife with two kids, a mortgage, and a stack of bills she couldn't pay. Mary had to sell the house and move everybody into this tiny two-bedroom apartment just to make ends meet. I never want to do that to my wife, so I got life insurance. I called AIG Direct and was really surprised how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. Listen, if you have a family, you should seriously think about getting life insurance. You'll feel a lot better having it. Trust me.
Call AIG Direct for a free, no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes, and you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-910-7981. That's 1-800-910-7981. 1-800-910-7981.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@gcnlive.com.
Why?
I believe you are the way, the truth, and the life. I believe you are the way, the truth, and the life.
Bill Martinez Live.
James Stewart, author of Tangled Webs and Heart of a Soldier, writes about David Kirkpatrick's book, Into the Hands of the Soldiers. He says, observant, eloquent, and empathetic, he's the perfect guide to the perplexing and sometimes heartbreaking events that snuffed out the democratic hopes of the Arab Spring. This is the rare nonfiction book that's as entertaining as it is informative. It's quite a compliment, David, and you have others as well that have chimed in and really appreciate, the research and the ground floor insight that you give us into a bit of history.
Thank you very much.
Well, as we mentioned, in terms of the inside story of, I said that Cece was asked to come in. I'm saying that in terms of a void that there needed to be some leadership, but you had a strong military, and it turned into somewhat of a coup, did it not?
Yeah, I think that's what you have to call it. The guy who was a defense minister took over the government, abolished the Constitution, and today he's the president, reelected twice with about 98% of the vote. If that's not a coup, I don't know what is.
Yeah, exactly. And at the time you're documenting, and reporting here, and this is the first time that we've really seen and heard of the conflicts that were existing in the Obama White House. Explain to us what was going on.
Well, this is definitely the closest look at that unfolding. I mean, if you look at the last 48 hours before the president of Egypt was removed, President Mohamed Morsi, an Islamist, but the first freely elected president of Egypt, you see President Obama on the phone with Morsi trying to help him stay in office, trying to coach him how to build bridges to his civilian opposition, and even, earnestly bringing up the example of Nelson Mandela, saying, look, this is what Mandela did after apartheid, and this is how you can pull it out, too. At the same time, others in the administration were already signaling pretty broadly that they had thrown in the towel on Morsi, that they no longer considered him tenable or would approve of some sort of intervention. And indeed, when that intervention took place, the voices like Michael Morrell, who'd been acting director of the CIA for those months, told Arab supporters of the coup that he was all for it, despite stated American policy. And when the Obama administration convened an emergency meeting to try to figure out how to respond, the overwhelming consensus was not to call the military takeover a coup, because that would have entailed cutting off or suspending American military aid to Egypt, that $1.3 billion a year in military aid that the U.S. has been sending Egypt for decades.
Right, exactly. And, of course, on our military side, you got General James Mattis, head of Central Command, now Secretary of Defense, and Michael Flynn as well, names that we've grown familiar with under this current administration. And they were in contact with the Egyptian military you write about, and they were for Sisi taking over, right?
Yeah, they certainly were. You know, I had a chance to meet with General Flynn in 2016 before he entered the Trump administration for his short term as National Security Advisor, and he recounted to me visiting Egypt and talking to the generals, and he tried to convince me, he told me he'd been convinced by his visit that the Muslim Brotherhood was taking over the Interior Ministry, which is crazy, frankly. You know, the Interior Ministry joined the coup readily, and it's clear the Brotherhood had no inroads to the Interior Ministry whatsoever. But anyway, he was a resolute and enthusiastic supporter of Sisi and the military takeover. And when I pressed him for what kind of advice he had given the generals, he was pointedly silent and said it was too sensitive, really, to discuss. General Mattis is another interesting case. He was the head of Central Command during the run-up to the coup. And during the interim between when he was in uniform and when he became Secretary of Defense under President Trump, he gave a number of speeches, which are interesting because I think they broadly reflect the mindset of many in uniform at the time. And he pretty much blamed Morsi for his own overthrow. He said that the problem was his, quote-unquote, imperious leadership. But funnily enough, now that Sisi has taken over, General Mattis says that the only thing the U.S. can do to support democracy in Egypt is to support President Sisi, former General Abdel Fattah Sisi, who really is a much more forceful strongman than Morsi ever was.
Exactly.
And I think one reason why General Mattis, now Secretary of Defense Mattis, might feel that way is he has a really strong antipathy towards political Islam. Mm-hmm. He's made it clear repeatedly that he considers all Islamists to be a problem, whether they're the kind who call for elections, as Morsi did, or al-Qaeda, the kind that fly airplanes into tall buildings. And the way he puts it in those speeches is they're all swimming in the same sea.
Mm-hmm. But you have a situation, do you not, David, where, you know, you got a military mindset versus a political mindset. You know, it's no wonder, I would think, that General Mattis would be more simpatico, if we might say that, with Sisi, because you got the military mindset.
Well,
is that valid?
Close military. Well, you know, leaving aside mindsets, there's also just a basic partnership. You know, the U.S. military works very closely with the Egyptian military. The American military trains many Egyptian generals. So it's understandable that they would have a close relationship and that they're, you know, in terms of the debates within the administration, you kind of expect the defense minister, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to speak up in defense of that relationship.
Of course.
The surprise is probably Secretary Kerry. You know, you expect the State Department, in contrast, the civilians in government, to be talking about other values, to be talking about long-term stability, the importance to U.S. interests of openness and trying to establish a more responsive government in Egypt. That was not really where Secretary Kerry came down. He was certainly among those who had given up on Morsi. And when Sisi took power, Kerry argued at the time that it was not, in fact, a coup, both internally and externally. He argued, and I really can hardly understand how, right, that the generals were restoring democracy.
Well, what was it about the Obama administration? You know, it just seems that, you know, for the sake of, I don't know if you want to call it political correctness, covering your rear ends or whatever it was, they just could, I mean, they seem to be, I don't know, afraid of the truth. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know,
I'm glad you laughed, because I mean, I just don't want to say something blatant here. I mean, with all due respect, but it's just like, wow. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm a newspaper reporter. So my operating assumption is that politicians in general are not about the truth. Mm-hmm. So I think you can broaden that out and say that, you know, people who are concerned about political power will not have the same regard for honest speech that we do in the media.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we need. I mean, and that's why I got to tell you, I'm so grateful for your book, and I appreciate your perspective in pursuing the truth on this and enlightening the West as to what's going on. I mean, this is a piece of history, and to me, this is what journalism is all about, is to document history. And you've done a stellar job in doing that, David, if I might say that to you. Let's talk about the struggle between grassroots and the state of feminism in the Arab world. What do you see now?
Well, this was one of the more fascinating revelations for me in writing the book. I never focused that much on the question of feminism in the Arab world. And what I learned was that there's such a thing as state feminism, you know, that under Mubarak, feminism was monopolized. You couldn't have any feminism. You couldn't have any women's organizing outside of the National Council for Women, headed by his wife, Suzanne Mubarak. And what improvements there were to the lives of women were pretty much handed down from above by Suzanne Mubarak's organization. And some people worried that when Mubarak was overthrown, then the patriarchal culture was going to take over and all of those advances would be washed away. I really feel like I saw something very different. And when there was an opening, when political speech was opened up and freedom of association was possible, you saw women organizing for themselves and trying from the bottom up to try to change that culture. We saw demonstrations by women in the streets of Cairo that the Arab world has not seen ever before, certainly not in many decades. And all that now has been foreclosed. Recently, just to give you an example, a woman named Amal Fassi, who's the wife of a friend of mine, posted on Facebook to describe some of the harassment that she had been through just in the course of a trip to the bank. You know, her taxi driver tried to grope her. The bank guard grabbed his crotch at her. She posted about all this on Facebook, and you'll never guess what happened to her. The next night, the police show up at her apartment and arrest her and her family. She is in jail now, more than a month later, charged with disseminating false news and calling for the overthrow of the regime. And that's, you know, that's one of the limitations of state feminism, when the only feminism that's allowed is the first lady or a government-appointed counsel. That body will never criticize the police, and it will never really criticize the president or the enforcement of the laws.
The heartbreaking story and aspect of Into the Hands of Soldiers, summarize that for us in the last 30 seconds we have together, David.
Well, we've seen the hopes of the Arab Spring crushed. And 5 years ago today, we saw a massacre that's largely forgotten. It was many as 1,000 unarmed civilians. So that's at the heart of the story I'm trying to tell.
Well, David Kirkpatrick, international correspondent for The New York Times, his book, Into the Hands of Soldiers, Freedom and Chaos in Egypt and the Middle East. If you have any interest whatsoever, this is a must read. He's done an outstanding job in presenting history to us. This book will be linked on our website and available at all the usual places. David, again, thank you so much for the time and the book. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk tough. Let's talk comfort. Let's talk about down-home value. Made in the USA blue jeans, like you wore as a kid. Remember?
There's a place down in Tennessee where they make blue diamond gusset jeans. They show pride in every stitch. Guarantee you love the way they fit. Put a diamond gusset in the crotch where you need it most. Blue diamond gusset's got it. Others don't.
For good old-fashioned comfort, get diamond gusset jeans. Every stitch guaranteed. And our Defender motorcycle jean comes Kevlar reinforced. See them at GUSSET.com. That's gusset.com. Or call 888-848-7738. That's 888-848-7738. Diamond gusset jeans got it. Others don't.
Hi, I'm Dan.